This episode of the Vision Board Podcast is brought to you by Onnit. Why Onnit, you ask? Well, here's a word from Onnit's founder and CEO, Aubrey Marcus.
You know, Onnit is the company that has the tools to improve your performance. And in whatever area that you're looking for, we have something to do it. You know, it's like going to it's the Home Depot of house repair, but instead of house repair, it's body and mind repair. You know, and it's body and mind performance enhancement. It's going to that body shop and figuring out what tools that you can apply to help make your life better.
At the Vision Board Podcast, we only promote supplements that we use ourselves, and we only use the best. To give you insights, here's Johnny.
Yeah, guys, my two favorite that I take, one, Alpha Brain. Alpha Brain really helps improve mental focus and memory, and the second one I really swear by is Shroom Tech. Shroom Tech is designed to help your body with energy and cardiovascular endurance. What's your favorite, Tristan?
Johnny, the two that I love is the Warrior Buffalo Bars. I find these delicious snacks, and they're also perfect for when I'm on the road and also on the run. Also, I love the Dolce Whey. They're grass-fed whey protein isolate, perfect for my smoothies and also my post-workout shakes. Now, guys, check out the range at www.onnit.com, and please use code word VISIONBOARD for 10% off at checkout. Now, guys, enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Welcome back, guys. Episode 144 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell. Alongside me, Johnny Stofko.
What's up, everybody? What's up, Tristan? 144, man. They're flying.
Yeah, man. We got a great week. The Shamrock Week, my man. We got Frank today.
Yeah, Frankie boy, man. You know, legend of MMA, original gangster, brother to Ken. Got a lot to talk about.
Yeah, man. He was one of those, he's like the original Conor McGregor. The fact that, I think it was a five-win streak, was it? He didn't fight in the UFC for too long, but huge MMA career, as you would know.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, referencing McGregor, like how they marketed themselves and being able to leverage their name as a fighter into that entrepreneurial world.
I guess the branding back then wasn't as known as it is today. And I guess, you know, they probably didn't even have a lot of managers and things like that directly. And I guess promoters back in the day, very scummy back when they were fighting.
Dude, it was like the Wild West. Like, it's interesting. Guys, listen at home, man. Pull up those old UFC videos as tapes so you could get them, and things were different.
Yeah, for sure. I'm really excited to get him on. Just a big thank you to everyone checking out the show. You know, we've grown a lot over this kind of last 6 to 12 months. So a big thank you to everyone checking out the show, leaving iTunes reviews, and telling your friends about us.
Yeah, we can't thank you enough. All the likes, the shares, the new subs, new fans listening now, old fans been with us since jump. We appreciate you. We continue with the support. We love it.
For sure, man. All right, guys, without further ado, here's Frank Shamrock. Okay, our special guest today is Frank Shamrock. Frank is a legend of MMA and was the first to hold the UFC Middleweight Championship, which was later renamed the UFC Light Heavyweight Championship. He retired from the UFC as a four-time defending and undefeated champion. Today, he's a motivational speaker, coach, mentor, actor, broadcaster, and has recently started his new hit show, The Bakeout. We welcome Frank Shamrock. Frank, welcome to the show, my man.
All right, thanks for having me back.
Frank, thanks for stopping by the Vision Board. I've been a fan of yours when you were fighting, when you were commentating. When we said you were going to stop by the show, we were getting questions from left and right field. Could you share with our fans and your fans listening now a current project you're working on and, you know, what 2017 is bringing to the table for Frank Shamrock?
Sure. Well, I just opened a new studio for my charity. So we'll be doing scholarships here for technology and arts and entertainment and martial arts. I have a new healthcare company that we've launched this year as well, which is in the cannabis space. So you'll see some Shamrock products come out in the medical field. And then my little girl's, you know, going into the fourth grade. So we're, you know, gearing up for that and all that entails.
Yeah, that entrepreneurial side of you, people might not expect that. Where did that grow from?
Well, pretty much necessity. I mean, I grew up on the street, so, you know, I used to be somewhat of a criminal, and then I figured out that didn't really work out that well. So I took that energy and just put it into into being an entrepreneur. You know, I've made more money in business than I have in fighting, and I certainly can attest to the pen being mightier than the sword.
Frank, you've been a champion in every promotion that you fought for, Pancrase, UFC, Strikeforce, etc. Was this something that was a mindset of yours, or was this something that was, like you said, entrepreneurial mindset was a necessity, was just how you roll?
I think it was a necessity. You know, in the beginning, there wasn't enough money. So I had to create several businesses, you know, to live the life I wanted to provide for my family in the way I wanted to. I just kept the hustle going. I mean, at one point, I think I had like, you know, four or five contracts shortly before I retired, to do pretty much anything and everything. I grew up without, so I never wanted to have that again, you know, so I always worked hard.
Yeah. That experience that you did have, you know, growing up rough, can you just share some of the experiences that you went through and what you try to teach children today?
Sure. Well, I became a ward of the state when I was 11 years old. So, you know, I left my home and I went into the state care systems and the foster cares and group homes and stuff like that. And it was really challenging, both from a developmental side and from an educational side. And then a social, you know, socialization side. It was hard to, you know, figure everything out. I learned quite young, you know, to crime was the way to get what you needed and wanted. I tried that method first, so that didn't work out that well for me. I ended up, doing quite a bit of time here and there and spending a lot of my youth in and out of youth institutions and incarcerations.
You shared the octagon with, you know, Caesar, Henzo, Tito. You fought Boss like 20 times. Do you feel that the experiences as a younger dude really benefited you when it was time to fight? And was there ever a moment during your fight career that you were kind of nervous or hesitant about throwing hands?
Well, I was always nervous and hesitant because it seemed incredibly dangerous and dangerous. I was always a little, you know, reticent because it seemed completely insane. And I'm a pretty smart dude. But, it's all I had. You know, it was my opportunity. Smart enough to see that, you know, if I could stomach it and I could get through it, I could create something of success for myself and for my family. And you know, I was just blessed that along the journey, you know, I found martial arts and the martial arts culture. And you know, it really helped me mature into, you know, a good, strong adult and, an educated businessman with strong principles.
That 15 minutes before you enter the octagon, what's going through your mind, Frank?
15 minutes, I'm usually in prayer, in our group prayer. You know, that's after I've taken my nap and meditated and visualized about 15 minutes before we're all huddled up, we're saying a big prayer and, just thanking God for the opportunity to go out and perform.
You mentioned earlier strong principles. Every great brand and business has a mission statement that's congruent with their values. Could you share with us a little bit about your personal brand of Frank Shamrock and what some of your principles are?
Sure. Well, my personal mission statement is that my goal is to protect people. And that's kind of like my whole thing. And I'm sure it stems from the troubled life that I had and feeling, you know, unprotected at a great many times. But when I approach all of my stuff, you know, I look and I see, you know, does this hold the core principle? Is this going to help somebody learn to protect themselves or make themselves better or, you know, create something better than it was? And if it has that principle, I kind of jump aboard. And then the others are the principles of martial arts, which are, you know, honor, respect, discipline, you know, mind, body, spirit. And when you put those tools into a culture, you get really valuable employees, really dedicated people, really passionate, you know, executives.
Do you feel that we were talking to a former martial artist champion, and he was talking about the importance of instilling those mental disciplines to younger people, young children. Do you feel that martial arts is something that should be practiced by all young children in terms for discipline?
Totally. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, in most cultures, there's some, you know, martial, you know, structure that kind of defines and helps develop the culture from, you know, some recent, you know, uprising or whatever. And, you know, we've just lost that in our cultures. You know, we don't have that need to fight for what's ours as much. You know, we're pretty protected these days. But, you know, at its core, you know, this is one of those things that binds a community together on a shared vision, you know, with shared common goals. And, you know, usually your village is, you know, on the line, or, you know, your body is on the line in a fight. But in a culture, it just makes everybody better because everybody's trying to be their best person, you know, trying to be their best person in a community. So, yeah, as a fabric, you know, I recommend it for everybody.
Do you feel what we lost as a society, as a community, was a rite of passage of some sorts? And if so, is that something that could start at a nuclear level, a nuclear family, or does it have to start from above at the community level?
No, the beauty of martial arts is anybody who wants to better themselves or otherwise can join with somebody else and it will start growing. So it's very much, you know, it's very much a primal human thing to bond together, you know, when you go on these missions. I guess no one wants to go on the mission alone. But no, it pulls people together. And as a mentor and as a teacher, I've seen what it does to communities and to individuals. And then when you step back and you see what it does to a country or to the morale of a nation, you know, then it's like that's where things start really changing.
Frank, who first taught you how to fight, man?
My brother, Ken, did. Yeah, I mean, I was a pretty tough guy before that, you know, in that I never let anybody mess with me. But he was the first guy to show me how to fight, like really get down and fight.
And what was the biggest lesson that you've learned from your brother?
I learned from him the mental thing. You know, he was so mentally strong. You know, nobody ever walked through our door and ever bested him in anything. You know, because he refused to have that happen. So, you know, he couldn't do that in the, you know, in the cage, and he couldn't do that in the performance time. But, you know, long before, he set it down in his own head that said, no one will ever be tougher than me in this gym. So it didn't matter who came through that door, he would destroy them. And that, to me, was a huge eye-opener on the, you know, mindset of a champion and, you know, what you can achieve when you just flat refuse or when you, you know, go all in.
Being a combat fighter in your prime and, you know, a warrior, any fighter on the planet has to learn how to lose and deal with it individually. Could you share some insight and advice to our listeners, maybe people who are struggling with failures? What sort of work for you to get over a loss? Was it a pattern or was it the preparation that helped you prepare for the loss?
Well, for me, it was always the lesson. What was the lesson? You know, losing is a lesson. It's rare that you show up, 1,000% ready and someone just kicks your butt. Like, that's just rare. You know, there's always a little something, you know, that you could have done. To me, it comes down to when you're in 1,000%, you know, when you fully, it's like Ken, when you fully believe, you know, you're unbeatable because, you know, how do you stop that? And then when you're fully trained and then when you're fully prepared mentally, you know, it's just so hard to stop that force.
Frank, what was the difference between someone like yourself that became a champion versus someone that is just a contender?
It comes down to mindset. It comes down to, you know, what most people don't know is I made peace before every fight and I went out there willing to die. Like, I went out there 1,000%. And, you know, most people don't show up like that. And, you know, when you're not ready and you meet that guy kicks your ass. And that's a lot of what happened is, you know, I come from the streets where you're fighting for your life. So I thought we were doing the same. And, you know, when you meet that type of intensity and when you meet that type of warrior, it's frightening, you know, and it takes a lot to keep up. And most people could not.
We were chatting with a really popular big wave surfer. He was a champion. And when asked what success was to him, he said success is the willingness to fail. How would you answer that question?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the same thing. Ultimate success is just going all in, because then you get the lesson. You know, to me, the only time I ever lost was when I wasn't prepared, when I didn't complete, you know, when I skipped X. Every other time, everything was in place. Nobody ever even touched me. And that's what most people don't get. It's like, you know, the more you win, the more everyone's like, you're amazing. You can do less and less. So it's this big mind, you know, tweak, and a good loss, you know, someone that really kicks your ass. You know, if you're a champion, then you sit down and you go, okay, what really happened here? You know, because that's not, you know, you don't accept, you know, ass kicking.
Yeah. Were you scared before every fight? How did you control your fear, Frank?
Every single fight, deathly afraid. And I learned to manage it through meditation, through visualization. And then I did a lot of training my own brain to accept and administer higher levels of violence.
What sort of meditation were you practicing in your career? Was it a simple, like, stillness with yourself? Did you get in the float tank? Could you share some insight on that?
Sure. No, I learned to meditate when I was in prison. And I learned to, you know, create in my mind what I wanted to have in my life. So, you know, that for me is just a quiet place, you know, series of deep breathing and relaxation exercises till I can, you know, put myself into a place of, you know, relaxation and disassociation. And then I could see stuff, you know, you could see through all the, you know, all the weird stuff.
Is this a common practice with fighters? Like, were guys at your gym doing this?
Well, everybody I trained did. All the people I trained did. Because, and I'm, all the super athletes that I've ever met do the same thing. Because, like, we all know that if you see it in your brain, it happened, whether you did it or not. You know, you can literally, you know, your brain's made of plastic. And, you know, it's, you can train it to do anything. So if you see it happen, it happened. Whether you see it in your brain, on TV, on a movie, in a book, it happened. And you can actually, you know, get better and, you know, get that ultimate confidence just by seeing it over and over and over. That's what happened with Kevin Jackson when I armbarred him in 14 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, I saw it. And I kept telling everybody, I was like, guys, listen, there's a huge hole here. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's only because no one had seen it yet. The minute I did it, everyone was like, oh, my gosh, of course, look at that. You know, it's been there the whole time. Mm-hmm. But it was only because I was able to slow everything down to a point where I wasn't afraid. You know, none of what anyone else said meant anything except for the mechanics of the technique.
Yeah, we talked. Yeah, sorry.
No, that's where the meditation takes you. Because then you're like, wow, if I can see it, and I've seen it 100 times, and you get close to me, I'm going to do it on you, because I've already done it 100 times in my brain.
What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.divisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show. Yeah, we talked to a law of attraction, Dr. John DeMartini, and he was breaking down and sharing the power of visualization. And I just never put two and two together in terms of doing the visualization meditation like you're sharing with us. Talk to us now how the visualization meditation has changed from when you were in prison to when you were preparing to be a world champion to right now.
Sure. It's a very similar process in that I first learned to meditate because I was deathly afraid I was going to get killed in a cage fight in some foreign country, which I thought would be, you know, really sad. So, you know, I had all this crazy fear I had to deal with. So I learned to deal with it through meditating, relaxing, you know, getting rid of the fear. And then as I became an actor and a broadcaster and I started expanding all of my talents and roles, you know, that calmness and that meditation moment and that, you know, organizing my brain moment just became so valuable and so important. And so while I honed it in the fighting, I got really good at it, like in the broadcasting and the acting and the, you know, the hosting, all the other stuff, because that was a lot harder for me to do. But it was through the, you know, meditate, calm myself, visualize it happening, and then go do it. And it's like by the time I'm doing it, you know, I've already done it a million times. I've memorized it. You know, it's part of my brain.
Now, is this something that you would do throughout your day? Or is this something like, are you able to do this like in the grocery store or like, you know, or is it something that you have to devote a specific time and place to be in your own space?
It depends on what I'm attacking. And I think that's where, you know, that's where the idea is. If I'm going into a cage fight, I need some intimacy. I need some focus. If I'm going to host a golf tournament, I don't need much. If I'm going to do, you know, CBS primetime sports broadcasting, I'm going to meditate quite a bit and visualize and really, you know, calm myself. What happens is people go into these situations and they're not mentally or physically or spiritually ready. And they fall apart, you know, and these tools get you ready and help hone that readiness. You know, so when you perform or when you act or when you do, you know, it flows.
Yeah. What other daily habits do you have that, you know, contribute to a good day for you, Frank?
Exercise every day, pray every day, you know, family time, you know, very much a mind body approach. And then I try to, you know, carve out each of my day. And I, you know, I'm blessed; I don't have to work, so I can kind of, you know, make my day what I need it to be.
In the opening, you mentioned your health company. We talk a lot about purpose and intent for how we live our life. Could you share with us your purpose for creating this?
Sure. Well, it goes back to helping people. And it goes back to my belief that we've lost a lot of our personal rights here in our country. In that, you know, you can no longer just go and plant a seed in your backyard and harvest the medicine, you know, and distribute that or deal with that in a way, you know. What's happened is through a lack of education, you know, we've given all of our personal medicine over to doctors and they're making all of our decisions for us when we're the only ones that know our body. We're the only ones that are in touch with what our spirit truly is. So, you know, part of our mission in this company is to get people back to understanding what their personal medicine is and how to take control of it. Because most people don't even understand what I'm talking about. They're like, no, my doctor will take care of it. And I'm like, that's the problem. It's like, why are you relying on this man that you see once a quarter to guide the health in your life? You know, that's you. You know, you should be in charge of that. So, you know, first we're going to launch a big awareness campaign, then we'll launch a bunch of educational products, and then we'll launch some actual health products that people can consume and benefit from.
Okay, it's probably a good way to introduce, you know, your new cannabis talk show, The Bake Out. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Frank?
Sure. Yeah, The Bake Out was started with a conversation. You know, once cannabis legalized here in California, it just became, you know, the biggest topic out there. And everybody wanted to get in on the business side. And, you know, I work in television, so I actually sat down and this conversation ended up in a talk show. And it's, you know, Robert's my partner, my co-host. And he's a dietitian, a nutritionist, and he does not believe in the medicine. And we sit around and we talk about it. We talk about the law, you know, how to consume it, you know, what's going on, the culture, and just all the dynamics of it. Because it's amazing that this one plant, you know, has done so much to the world, both for good and bad.
It's really a powerful plant. It's, you know, the textile, made for clothes, CBD oil, well documented, reducing inflammation, helping with cancer naturally. How do you think we got so off the track into trusting ourselves in synthetic made chemicals by people who just went to school for that?
You know, it comes down to progress and money. You know, progress, we've got all this amazing medicine, you know, we got all this great technology. If you're falling over dead, you know, they can probably save you these days. But if you have a common ailment, knee pain, back pain, if you got, you know, basic stuff, we don't have a lot for that. You know, we got addictive painkillers. We got like this other stuff, but we don't have a lot of natural, you know, supplements for our human being. Now, what did we have, you know, 200 years ago? We didn't have all this pharmaceutical stuff. You know, we weren't consuming these things to get rid of our pain that are addictive and hurting us. you know, we were consuming natural supplements and they were stopping the pain. And we need to get back to that moment. Why are we looking around for a fat pill? We know how to get rid of the weight. We know how to care for ourselves personally on the medicinal side. And we just need access to that stuff. We need access to the medicine and then get rid of these silly rules and these silly, you know, tracks for pharmaceutical people to make money.
Yeah. In terms of the cannabis use, Frank, like, what's your regime in terms of that?
Sure. Well, I consume 2 or 3 times a day, depending on my pain level. For me, it's all about pain management. And I don't smoke. I consume usually edibles, or I use the volcano vaporizer. So it fills up a bag with a plant vapor. And that's about the best way I've found to consume it for me.
Being a former champion, you know, under the UFC umbrella, what's happened with Nick, it's a guy that you fought, you know, about a decade ago. I'm talking about Nick Diaz, guys listening at home. The UFC has really handcuffed this kid. You know, in my opinion, he's a natural talent, a hell of a kid, and he hasn't been able to fight because of, marijuana use. But then you look at a sport like the NBA, which is one of the top 10 sports in the world. I just looked at those stats. And they don't even test for it because they know the importance of those guys beating their bodies up and smoking to reduce the inflammation or eating the edibles to help them with performance. Why is there such a big drastic difference between a sport like basketball and MMA in America?
We're a new sport, so we got a lot of eyeballs. And, you know, and there was a time when, you know, we didn't care as much and there wasn't as much testing. And a lot of the reason why the testing has gotten so severe is, you know, for a few years they were really lax. You know, then they kind of had to double down and double up. But until this law changes here in the United States, until it gets off the Schedule One, and until it stops being federally illegal, I mean, technically it's illegal. Like, it's illegal in the law of the land. So until that, you know, mess is cleared up, it's just going to be a problem.
One of my favorite teachers is Graham Hancock, when he talks about how we don't live in a free society when the government controls our consciousness, when a governing body could tell a man who owns a home, whoever, whatever they do, that they can't do something. Are you that in deep with it, or is it more something that you just use for your own personal, you know, recovery?
Yeah, I mean, here's what I was taught. I was taught as a young boy, this was a gateway drug and this is going to lead to heroin. So I did a professional sports career that every single doctor told me was absolutely impossible. I would never do it because of my spine and the injuries to my body. And I was able to do all that, you know, by using cannabis. And, you know, I watched my mentors and my teachers, you know, get addicted to painkillers and drugs and, you know, lose their families and their lives. I've been on pain management for 25 years. So to tell me this is a gateway, to tell me like all this other stuff, I know it's wrong. And, you know, but the problem is most people don't. Most people don't have this education. And most people just think we're smoking weed and getting high. And this plant and the technology have gone so much further than that. That's what the show is really about, is when you watch it, you go, holy moly, like, you know, when, like, there's like a cream now for women that they put inside their girly parts for like a sex aid. Like, it's gone so past, you know, people smoking weed, you know, with dreadlocks.
Is just to educate us just a little bit more, Frank, is there an amount that you can take without it affecting your mind or anything like that? Or realistically, like, really, we want to kind of, you know, the ramifications on children or crime like that, like, where does that all kind of tie in?
Well, when you start talking about the psychoactive effects of it, then you start talking about the additive of the THC. So there's 140 compounds in cannabis. THC is one of them. CBD, THV, there's a ton of them. But THC is the one that gets you high. Now, you know, if you're a young kid dying of an incurable brain cancer, I don't think they're too worried about that kid getting high. Yeah. Because he's going to die. You know, if you're 70 years old, then you've got rheumatoid arthritis and, you know, the painkillers are giving you is killing you. We're not worried about that guy taking a little bit of CBD oil. Maybe he gets high. And the idea of getting high is, I think, this bigger idea that people are battling against. When, you know, when I consume my cannabis, I don't get high.
Yeah.
I get high at all. And but you need some combination of the two, the CBD and the THC. They work together. So when you take one out, you lower the overall effect of both of them. So sometimes when I do that mid-afternoon, you know, bag, sometimes I'll be a little loopy for 10 minutes. But if I were to take the two Percocets that they want me to take, I would be stoned to the bone and out of my mind for 8 hours. I'd also be constipated. I couldn't sleep, and I'd have all these other side effects to it. And that's what they're prescribing to me and to every other person that has this amount of pain. So they're just becoming drug addicts because there's no way to control the pain through the medicine they're giving us.
Okay. We appreciate those insights. Now, Frank, we've come to the end, so we're going to hit the personality round, and Johnny's got the first question.
All right, Frank, if three of your closest friends were sitting in a room and you weren't there, what sort of things would they be saying about Frank Shamrock?
They would be telling the most ridiculous stories of probably me getting us all in trouble.
Now, Frank, on bad days, what do you like to do?
Lay on the couch.
All right, Frank. And when you were a child in your bedroom walls, what sort of posters did you have?
Oh, man. I had Quiet Riot.
Oh, yeah.
I had Def Leppard. I had the Ultimate Warrior from WWE.
Two in a row.
And, yeah, I had all the good stuff, man.
Well, that's two in a row. We just had another gentleman from South Africa on the show, and he had the Ultimate Warrior, and that was just before your interview.
Yeah, who would have
thought? Back to back. Now, just to wrap things up, Frank, you're going to be hosting a private dinner party. You've got 5 invites. Now, the only rules is it can be anyone dead or alive. It just can't be any family or friends. Who are you inviting?
Ooh, I would invite Muhammad Ali, and I would invite Bruce Lee and Chuck Norris and that'd be it.
That's a dangerous dinner party, man.
Yeah, maybe you should invite some type of meditation guru there too to even everything out. Frank, man, I grew up watching you, dude. It's a pleasure. We've been trying to get you on the show for a while. We appreciate your time and sharing the space with us, man.
Man, my pleasure. Now, absolutely my pleasure.
Now, for everyone at home, you can find Frank at frankshamrock.com. Twitter is on it, Frank Shamrock. And Facebook, the same thing. And you can find the Bakeout at bakeout.tv. Frank, my man, thank you so much for making an appearance on the Vision Board podcast. And we wish you the best for 2017, my man.
Right on. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Johnny, Frank Shamrock.
Yeah, man, finally got him to sit down with us, share some insights and stories, man.
It always is kind of like, don't judge a book by its cover. It's something a little bit different to what I did. I didn't expect that philosophy, that kind of that mindset side of him. So it was good.
Yeah, for sure. It's always one of those things. And it's really tough to know what to expect when you're dealing with a fighter, a champion, a guy at once in his prime that got paid to beat people up. Mm. You know, it's really tough, you know. So it was excellent and awesome to sit down with him and see the different side of Frank Shamrock.
Yeah, for sure. So a treat, guys. We've got his brother, Ken, coming on Wednesday. It's going to be an absolute treat between wrestling, MMA. You know, we both looked up with two of our favorite sports both growing up. So in terms of, we got a lot of questions for Ken. I can't wait, man.
Yeah, we're going back to back, man. I had his figurine as a kid.
Did you?
Yeah, man. The little world's
like
most dangerous man.
Sort of character.
He was wearing just like the black, I think it was undies. Black and red undies. Yeah, it was like super masculine.
Was it ripped? Did he look jacked?
Oh, hell yeah. Dude, Shamrock was scary. He'd run into the ring or the octagon, shoulders out like that. Yeah, he was definitely an imposing force.
Yeah, guys, thanks again for tuning into the show. Remember to share it with your family and friends, and please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes.
Love all that. Love the subscription. Share it. Hit us up, man. Tristan and I are always looking to get some feedback.
Johnny, I'll see you Wednesday, my man.
TK, bring it.
Peace.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching a niche, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working hard at it. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.